Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
It's from a band that writes really sad music for old white dudes. Welcome back to Royals Weekly. I am your host, Marcus Mead, and joining me as always, a man with zero skeletons in his closet, but many bags of human hair that he will not explain to his brother. My brother, Mike.
Hey, that's right. Hey, is this America? Are we still in America? Is this America still? Huh? All right. Can a man not collect the things he wants to collect and for whatever reasons he chooses? All right. Maybe it's because I'm missing so much back here. Maybe all my own human hair. You don't know.
He saves it just to remember the memories. He talks to it when no one's around.
Yeah. You know, that's when my barber's done, I say, sweep up all that hair, put it in a bag, and give it to me.
I want it. That's mine. yes, that is Mike in a nutshell. And that's everyone turning off the podcast and leaving forever, Mike. On this week's episode, we'll review a winning week from the Royals, including a sweep of the Oakland A's. Hey, we got sweepy against the Oakland A's coming off that high. We'll take a big picture look at what the Royals' coaching overhauls have done for them as a team. Nobody talks about it anymore, but remember that Matt Quatrero, Brian Sweeney, all these people were hired to make the turnaround happen. Now it has seemingly happened. So we're going to look back on what those coaching changes mean for the team. And then we're going to preview this week's games. But first, we want to make sure that you go out there and like, subscribe, write comments underneath this on YouTube. Give us the best possible chance you can to get us up the algorithm and get more listeners. Everything you do helps. Write a review for us on Apple Podcast. We love reading those on the air, on the podcast, so that we can hear your funny jokes and all that sort of stuff. Make sure you're giving us as much engagement as possible. It helps out a ton, and we really, really appreciate it. We also want to remind you that Royals Weekly is proud to be brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. Bet Online has all the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. We'll start a review of last week with roster news, sort of. I went and looked at the transaction list, and guess what? There weren't any for last week. The Royals have done literally nothing on the transaction line, and so there's really not much roster news to talk about. The only thing I wanted to bring up was Chris Bubich was reassigned in his rehab assignment to AA Northwest Arkansas and made a start for them today. I believe he went three innings, had three strikeouts, no runs, maybe allowed one hit, was really sharp today in his short outing. But he was just working his way back, getting ready to hopefully rejoin the Royals here sometime this season. On the field, the Royals went 4-3. They lost a series to the Mariners before coming home and sweeping the A's. That brings their overall record to 29-19, which puts them second in the AL Central. Good job on them bouncing back for the current homestand that they're in. Mike, what did you see from the Royals this week? How did they stand out to you?
Well, I saw a team that can compete with anyone, and a team that's going to beat the teams that they're supposed to, which has sometimes been a trouble even when the Royals have looked somewhat good in the last decade. And so very refreshing to see them beat up on the A's, who aren't as good as the Royals. They're having a better season than they were last year, but they're still not what I would call a good team. And so the Royals brought them in, kicked their ass, and moving on, you know?
I love that description of it. Kick their ass and we're moving on.
That's right. That's how it should be, right? You got to beat the teams you're supposed to beat in Major League Baseball. And the Mariners series was a great series to watch because super competitive games against a first-place team in their division with, I would say, maybe the deepest starting rotation in the American League and in the Seattle Mariners. And so to watch them go up against that, and I also think the Mariners starting pitchers are kind of a bad matchup for the Royals too. But to see them still be in those games and fighting and clawing, and no matter how much they're down, they're still going to try and have a chance in the eighth and ninth inning. That's what you want to see from a young team. That's what you want to see from a team that's competing to win their division, and if not their division, a wild card spot.
Yeah, I'm intrigued that some of the hitters this week looked like they started to pick it up again. And I'm going to talk about some of them. We're going to talk about some of them in our strong performances segment. Mikel Garcia picked it up a little bit. Other hitters. It looked like Bobby Witt Jr. started to get going again. He had a little mini slump in there. You know, Kyle Isbell hit a big home run yesterday. You know, Vinny came off the bench and he looks like he's gotten a couple hits in the last couple of days. It looks like their offense is getting at least a little bit more out of a few guys. And that, I think that's very, very important. And so to see, we know their pitching staff has what it takes. The question is, does their offense have what it takes? We're seeing a couple guys get back on track who we're definitely going to have to rely on, right? You can quibble over, like, should Nelson Velasquez be in this lineup or should it be in AAA and Drew Waters should be here? We're going to have to count on Mikel Garcia. We're going to have to count on Kyle Isbell in some ways. We're going to have to count on other guys in this lineup to be productive. We can't send them all to AAA, okay? And so hopefully some of these guys start turning it around, and it looked like maybe they're at least finding some success in that A's series. Mike, we had some strong performers. Anytime you sweep a team in a week, you're going to have some strong performers. Who was your strong performer this week?
He's my strong performer for the season, Salvador Perez, the Cappy captain. Oh, captain, my captain. And what a great weekend for him to have. Well, to cap off a great week for him, because they're remembering the team from 2014. He is the only link in that chain still. He is the guy that was on those teams as a young player and is on this team as well. And boy, did he lead them. He was 8-for-20 this week. 2 doubles, 4 RBI, 3 walks to 5 Ks. He's going to break his single season walk record in the first half this year, Salvador Perez is. And just, he's been everything for this team. And so I'm sitting back and I'm thinking to myself, man, if he hits 25 or 30 home runs, and man, if he is a top three for the batting title and his defensive numbers are looking as good as they've looked so far this year, he should get MVP votes. I mean, that's the thing. If he continues on what he is, he will get MVP votes, and he might be in strong consideration for the MVP because Shohei Ohtani is no longer in this league. And I know Aaron Judge is, and I know he's a great player. And I know some of the other great players in the American League, but Salvador Perez puts it offensively and defensively right now. And it just has been the leader of this team and wonderful to see.
It is wonderful to see. And you know what's crazy? Going into the season, we said all these things need to go right if the Royals are going to be any hint of competitive. And we sort of named all these different things. And one of them near the top was Salvador Perez bounces back, right? Like, but not only has he bounced back, he has bounced back and then 10 times that, right? Like to say like, oh, he's competed like an MVP through the first 50 games or so. That's insane to me. At 34 years old, the man is having the best season of his career, and they needed something like that to happen. The Royals are on a 95 to 96 win pace right now. That is only one of the huge factors why is that Salvador Perez didn't just bounce back. He bounced back to the best he's ever been, which is incredible to see. The fact that he's on pace to shatter his walk record by so much, I think is a big, I think you're now seeing what he could have been his entire career if he had just managed to be a little more patient in the past. Great to see him coming up with it.
And it's still a borderline Hall of Fame career.
Right. It's still a borderline Hall of Fame. Even before the patience came, the patience is just making it look like, oh man, he really has a chance to make it if he can put up another few seasons like this one. My strong performer for the week is Mikel Garcia. I mentioned earlier, hey, some guys started to hit again. He's the one that seems like the real spark plug to this offense. Came out today, hit a double to lead off the game, and then got knocked in on Bobby Witt Jr.'s who hit a double right after him. It's like, yes, the Royals scored 2 in the first because Mikel Garcia was on it. He went 7-for-21 this week with 3 doubles, 1 home run, 6 RBI, 4 strikeouts and 0 walks. So 0 walks is like, yeah, we'd like you to walk a little bit more, Mikel, but we do love to see the power numbers in there. Like, I know we were coming into the season, we were all like, hey, Mikel Garcia looks like he might have a little bit more power. And then he starts hitting with a little power, but then he goes into a slump and everybody's like, stop trying to hit for power, Mikel. It's what's causing you to lose batting average. Don't stop trying to hit for power, Mikel. Never stop trying to hit for power, right? Like, he needs to know when he needs to be taking those cuts for the fences or to hit drive the ball into gaps and stuff like that. When Mikel Garcia is up in counts and he gets fastballs or breaking balls on the inside half, he should be trying to turn and burn on those to really put a charge into them and do damage with the baseball, right? When he's behind in counts, sure, try and hit yourself a nice little single. When he's even or when it's late in counts, like deep into counts, like 3-2 or something like that, just try and get on base. But when he has an opportunity, he should take advantage of the fact that he can hit the ball really hard and try and turn on one. He did a little bit more this week, put a charge into a few baseballs, looked really, really good offensively. I hope it sticks with him. I hope he continues to be successful because he is so important to this lineup I cannot stress that enough. He, Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, Salvador Perez, as a top four that sometimes all the Royals have, they really need to be firing on all cylinders. A few guys were not firing on all cylinders, Mike. Instead, maybe just one cylinder. I don't know how many cylinders they have total, but I'm going to say maybe just one for these guys. Who was your weak performer for this week?
Well, I put him on here because he's not all that important as far as weak performers go or facets to the team, but we got to start having a conversation about Matt Sauer. And a lot of people have been bringing up Matt Sauer this week. He went 2 innings pitched this week, 6 hits, 5 earned runs, 2 home runs given up, and just 2 strikeouts. And the reason people are talking about Matt Sauer is because everybody's looking for different ways to get Drew Waters or Will Klein on the roster, the 26
or Walter Pennington.
Or Walter Pennington. Walter Pennington's another big one because you need a 40-man spot. And that kind of, and Matt Sauer kind of fixes that issue for anybody who need, if you, whether you need a 40-man spot or not. Because if you send him back to the Yankees, you can bring up Walter Pennington, no problem. He's cleared a 40-man spot for him, and you cleared a 26-man spot for him with that one move. And the other guys, that would clear the 26-man spot for them. So, although I don't know that you necessarily do that, then your numbers might be off. If you bring up Waters and you send Sowers, then you're talking about your numbers off in the bullpen. But yeah, you got to talk about it because I really liked it that they went out and took a chance on a Rule 5 guy. I don't know if the Royals have seen what they've wanted to see out of Sauer. He's been okay at times in mop-up duty, but I don't know that you've seen anything that says this guy is a major leaguer for sure.
Right and now,
so,
no.
Right like, now, anyway. Yeah, yeah. Right now. And so this team is in contention, and so maybe the deeper you get, the more pressure there's going to be put on to send Matt Sauer back to the Yankees and bring up somebody who can actually help you on this win games on this 26-man. Especially considering, do you know anything about Jordan Lyles? Do we know what's going on with Jordan? We don't know that. You know, you probably already have a guy in Zerpa who can go long relief stuff and, or at least multiple innings. So yeah, tough spot for Matt Sauer right now.
It is. And what's interesting is that there have been multiple things floated about how the Royals might do this, right? One is like, oh, make a trade with the Yankees and then, you know, keep Sauer. You know, like maybe trade some low-level minor league or something like that. The problem is the Yankees would want to make that trade, right? They liked Sauer as a prospect too, not enough to protect him on the 40-man, but I'm sure they didn't want him taken. And so they would probably demand something, you know, not significant, but not insignificant in return for Sauer. That also doesn't free up a 40-man spot. You'd have to do other things to try and get him off the 40-man. And so there are a lot of complicating factors here. For Sauer, he really has been... His exposure has been really limited in large part because of the success of the starting rotation. They've been able to go so deep into games. The bullpen hasn't been pressed to go as deep as Sauer's, who is their last guy out of their bullpen, to throw any sort of crucial innings. And so
I think maybe once or twice he's pitched in what you might even call important situations.
Medium leverage. High leverage. You call them medium leverage, right?
Yeah. Like, twice.
Maybe twice, right? Like, Cotero's done a great job protecting him, and the starting rotation's done a great job pitching deep into games, so he doesn't have to be used. But you're right. It hasn't looked like he is capable of being a bullpen piece in a major league roster that looks like it wants to compete right now. And so you're right. The further they get into the season, the more they'll have to think about do we still want Matt Sauer up here to protect or to sort of fill out the rest of our bullpen? My weak performer is somebody who, unlike Matt Sauer, does not have the excuse of this is my rookie season. And that is MJ Melendez. Over the last week, he went 2-for-18 with 2 doubles, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. The 1 walk and 6 strikeouts is really not what I want to see from MJ Melendez in a week. Just struggling when he puts the ball in play. He's popping a lot of balls up. They're clearly trying to limit his exposure right now because he's struggling. And they're like, we want to get you as many off days as possible right now. And so he's just not playing a ton either. And so, you know, he's a guy who, another one of those guys who they really need him offensively. He's probably not going down to AAA, right? Like, they need him offensively. They need him to bounce back. I'm sure he's working on things with Alex Umwalt, but they really have to find what his thing is so that he can get back to being a centerpiece of this lineup, because they're really relying on him to make their lineup deeper than 4 guys. And right now he's not fulfilling that. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, completely. And when you going into this season, we were talking about all the things that had to go right. One of them was MJ Melendez really needs to become a part of this offense. Now he hasn't, and other guys have stepped up as a result, but boy, you really need him to get better. And I was talking about this with a coworker the other day. Like, you can see the changes they're trying to make in his swing day to day. Like, every time he gets in there, it looks like, oh, they made a little tweak here. Oh, they made a little tweak here. They even mentioned on the broadcast the other day. They were like, hey, he sacked the flamingo kick for like a day or, you know, for a little while and was going with more of a toe tap. And then, so I like that he's making adjustments. That I'll always be in favor of guys taking coaching when they're struggling and doing those sorts of things. But boy, he's hurting you. He's hurting you bad right now, and he does have options. And so that's why a lot of people are calling for him to go down. I don't know if that's necessarily the fix, but I do like that he's changing things. And right now you're doing pretty well without him. So maybe give him some time to figure out how those changes he needs to make so that he can come back with some sort of contribution to the team.
Yeah, he's the type of guy. I don't think he's going down, in part because this coaching staff has showed that they want guys to work through stuff at the major league level. They want them seeing major league pitching and working it because it's totally different than AAA pitching. Yes, MJ Melendez could probably go down to AAA and rake down there and then come back. But what good is that going to do him when it comes to facing guys in the major leagues where the book on him is going to be so advanced, where they're going to have much better command, where they're going to have much better stuff? Like, it's just a different world. And so I think they're like, if MJ is going to get fixed, it's going to be here at the major league level. It's not going to be down in AAA. Mike, with all of this in mind, Royals coming off a 4-3 week. They looked really good against the A's, decent against the Mariners. What's your theme for this week?
Oh, I really like this one for me this week. I was very excited about it. And it's a little backstory to it. There is a music documentary that I absolutely love from the early 2000s about the band The Drive-By Truckers. It is called The Secret to a Happy Ending, and it was like an independent thing, and it kind of got some pub because of the music that was in it and stuff like that back then. But I own it on Amazon, and just when I've had a rough week or anything, I will turn it on. So I turned it on Thursday night, kind of late actually, and just listened to it and watched. And then when I was thinking of a theme this week, the opening song that they play from that documentary just jammed into my head and I couldn't get it out. And the song is called World of Hurt by the Drive-By Truckers. And one of the lines is, remember, it ain't too late to take a deep breath and throw yourself in into it with everything you got. It's effing great to be alive. Okay.
What are you censoring yourself? What are you self-censorship in here? Right. Come on.
It's fucking great to be alive.
There we go, baby. Nobody's holding us back.
And so this song is like so good. First off, and if you know anything about the Truckers, you know that early on, especially, they did some songs where it was like basically spoken word songs. Like the verses are all speaking and the chorus is singing, but it's a great, great, great song. And it made me think of like, is now the time to throw it all in and say, we're going for it, man. We're second in the AL Central. We got the Guardians coming up two times in June. Let's go at it with everything we got. It's fucking great to be alive. You know, like, that's, you know, are we doing that? Are we going for it? Are we taking one more chance, or are we going to let it? Are we just going to accept it? What comes, you know, either way, I'm fine. Cause the Royals are playing quality baseball, but damn, it feels good to go after it.
Yeah. That's a question I think a lot of us are wrestling with right now. Like, what would it look like to say, hey, we're going to go for it this year? I don't know anybody who's like, let's trade the farm to load up on
talent. I'm not saying that.
But, you know, it goes into questions like, do we send Nelson Velasquez down and bring up Drew Waters? Do we cut Garrett Hampson? You know, like, these are all questions that are tied up in that notion of like, are we going for it, or are we, you know, happy with whatever happens, you know? My theme for this week also,
there is a 70% chance I watch that documentary again tonight.
Nice.
Nice.
Same documentary over and over every single day. What's it from? It's from a band that writes really sad music for.
Yeah. They were relevant like 20 years ago.
Yeah. Way to go. My, theme is also from a band that writes songs for old white dudes from the 90s and 2000s. And so, it comes from, the Dave Matthews Band. And it's This is from Dave Matthews' solo album called Save Me. And this is from the title track, Save Me. And it's interesting. You have to have a little backstory for this too. There, in the song, it's a story about a guy sort of going along in life, and he's asking God to save him, right? Like, save me, please, save me, all these different reasons, you know? And then towards the end of the song, this refrain pops in of somebody who has a really deep voice, and it's supposed to be God. And God just says, so this guy's saying, save me, save me. And the guy's just saying, might try saving yourself. Right. Like, and I've always thought that that line was particularly poignant, but I'm thinking about it in terms of the Royals offense right now. Right. Which put up quite a few runs in this A's series. And it's like we've heard, like, you know, it's been up to the pitching staff to save the Royals team the entire time, to save the offense from the fact that it has not been consistent and productive all the time. This week, or this weekend at least, they took a little shot at saving themselves, and it worked out pretty well. Royals Weekly is brought to you by Eric Oxer of West USA Realty. Phoenix has all of our favorite things, year-round golf, year-round baseball, and Eric Oxer of West USA Realty. Whether you want to buy your dream retirement home or just stay a while and catch spring training, Eric can help you find the perfect house for you. We've known him for more than 30 years and trust him far more than we even trust each other.
Mark likes to keep me on my toes by sneaking into my house and hiding cabbages all over the place. Some cooked, some raw.
You just got cabbaged, son. Eric does long-term rentals for the snowbird crowd and home sales and purchases for those who want to stay a while longer. Are you a baseball player or parent who needs a place in the Phoenix area? Eric will find you the perfect spot fast. Want to spend your days shanking golf balls into the great beyond? Eric knows the golf scene like Mike knows the early 2000s TNT hit series, Charmed. Find Eric online at ericoxer.com if you can figure out how to spell his name. It's ericaxier.com, or just shoot him a text at 480-383-9745. That's 480-383-9745. Even if you're just curious about what he can do for you, he's 100% no pressure, one of the best people we know,
and he's saved my life at least 27 times.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
On this week's Spotlight segment, we'd like to take a look back at what was really the turning point for the Royals as an organization. The hiring of J.J. Piccolo, Matt Quatrero, and Brian Sweeney. It's a little odd to talk about all three. Sorry, I must have not edited this, but it's a little odd to talk about all three because they were obviously hired at different times. J.J. Piccolo came first, then Matt Quatrero, then Brian Sweeney, and one of them was not mid-season, but towards the end of a season. So it's a little, and they're all at different levels too. But I want to talk about them because we're talking about the Royals having so much success right now, and I feel like it's important to go back and have more conversations now that we have more data on the effectiveness of those three. Mike, because they're sort of have a chronology to them, we're going to go chronologically, but it's also going to be from top down. So top dog, bite them all, J.J. Piccolo gets to go first. Cast your mind.
That early 2000s hip hop reference.
Bringing God. All early 2000s stuff back. I brought up a Charmed reference. We got a Snoop Dogg reference. Mike, cast your mind back to September 21st, 2022. Dayton Moore is unceremoniously dumped in favor of J.J. Piccolo. Looking back on the 20 plus months of Piccolo's reign, what is your assessment of his tenure so far?
I think you have to respect the different direction that he has taken the organization in, especially considering the fact that he really was a Dayton Moore guy. Like, he cut his teeth and kind of came through the league with Dayton Moore and went in such a different direction than what Dayton was even willing to do, and has seemingly been very different. Now, I'm not in love with everything he's done, but so far you can't really argue with the results of this second year. I mean, what, Piccolo took over full time a little bit before last year, right? If I'm not mistaken. That's correct. Yes, 2023 season. Yeah. And so that's one bad year, and it looks like he's really had the opportunity to turn it around. And we haven't even seen it all yet, but I really give him props for not just going, I'm going to try and stick with the way that I've seen it done. He went out and said, I've got to find some people who are going to do it differently. And that is a huge, huge swing when your job is on the line, you know?
Yeah, that takes a ton of humility, right? Like, humility means J.J. Piccolo saying, like, I was a part of the system that was not working, right? Like, I was a part of the thing that wasn't going right, right? Which was obvious on the face of it, but there are a lot of people who are unwilling to look that reality in the face and say, yeah, we can't keep doing it that way, right? Like, and people were worried that J.J. would just keep doing it the Dayton Moore way, right? Obviously, that's not the case. The way in which I find it particularly appealing and refreshing is Piccolo has very clearly seems to have a notion that a different notion of player development than Dayton Moore did, right? Which is that, one, we're going to bring in people who are on the cutting edge of player development. He's going to see player development not just as like guys go into the machine, they come out of the machine. He's thinking about what is the machine? Like, what is the thing that is actually turning our players that we draft, sign internationally and all that into good players? Like, even the guys we sign as free agents, what are the mechanisms that are actually going to turn them into good players? Dayton Moore, it often felt like, just expected it to happen. Like, there's this old notion of player development, just that, like, well, you take a whole bunch of players, you plug them into the system, some are going to make it out, some of them won't, and then that's player development, right?
Which is efficiency, like, when you do that, by the way. Just
terrible.
Atrocious. Which small market teams can't do. Value. They can't do that.
No, they really can't. They can't have that inefficient of processes, especially in the 21st century. 21st century player development looks at every aspect of how a player might get better from the time they join an organization until they reach the major leagues, and even in the major leagues, until they're done with the organization completely. They look at every aspect of how they can improve that player, and they try to maximize it, right? And so J.J. Piccolo went out and signed guys from Tread and Driveline to come in and be a part of the pitching player development. He hired coaches from other organizations to make player development a thing that happens up and down the chain from rookie ball to the major leagues. That seems to be a huge difference between those two, and I think J.J. deserves credit for sort of changing that culture. Mike, is there an aspect of JJ's leadership that you think he's done particularly well at?
I think the easiest places he's to see where he's had success is in player acquisition. You know, we've talked about these heavily. You know, to get a Cole Reagans for half a year of Aroldis Chapman, to get a Nelson Velasquez, even though he's not performing well, he's doing a lot better than Jose Kwas. You know, to get a MacArthur and turn him into what looks like a very good closer, you know. John Schreiber, a guy you feel like is going to be, you know, just another mid-rotation guy, turns into your fireman and a good one. And yeah, so the way he's been able to acquire players, I think, has been extremely good. And the way he kind of turned away from, you know, Will Smith quickly and said, hey, well, I don't know if he necessarily made that call or if it was Quintero, but, you know, he's done some things to find value out there that we didn't often see done. You know, Dayton loved his guys. He loved the guys that he drafted. He loved the guys that he signed, you know, internationally or as young players, and stuck with them till the end and would not get away from them and would not bring in other people to replace them. And I haven't seen that from Piccolo, and that's been very, very nice. The other thing is what seems like an organizational wide plan is in place. And that kind of touches on what you were just talking about. It doesn't feel like a machine that guys just get fed into anymore. It feels actually instructional, where guys have their individualized plans, and it's about executing that individualized plan for each one of those players to maximize their value. The old machine doesn't work anymore, like you just mentioned. And I feel like JJ has done a very good job of putting those plans in place at all levels. And that's how we turn a farm system that last year saw just awful, awful, awful player development into this year. Now you're seeing some guys really make some big strides and improvements.
Yeah, I think that's hugely important. I think that's tied to the sort of thing that I've seen him, that I'm particularly impressed with what he's done, and that is non-player personnel. Like, I think he has done a wonderful job hiring, identifying talent in the front office, in scouting, in player development, and bringing them into this organization. We're going to talk about Brian Sweeney and Matt Quatrero. I think those were two amazing hires. But also, they brought in Brian Bridges this last year. He's going to run their draft this year. And so, like, that sort of thing. The guys they brought in from Tread and Driveline, like, identifying coaches who were going to be a part of a change in the player development has been enormous, right? Like, to think that this system, which had just one of the worst minor league seasons I've ever seen from pitchers in, what was it, 2022? Yeah, 2022. To go from that to a system that's developing guys like Ben Cadorna looks really good now.
Hunter Patterson.
Hunter Patterson looks good right now. Mason Barnett. Noah Cameron. What's his name? Chandler Champlain
looks really great in
AA. To me, that is what is the most important thing to turning the organization around as a whole, rather than just creating like a one-off team that can do some winning. The thing that will make this sustainable is, are those coaches and player development and front office people in place who are going to really keep this ship moving? Mike, do you think there are any aspects where Pecola could do better?
Yeah, and now that I see yours on the outline, I'm a little disappointed that I didn't think of that myself. But all I could think of were things that we still need to see and that we haven't had enough time to see yet. And these are the two big things. Can the system develop starting pitchers? Okay. We know we were able to trade for Cole Reagans, and that was a great trade. And, you know, we were able to maybe develop him kind of at the major league level. We know they've done some things for Singer at the major league level. And then we signed two guys that have been fantastic in Lugo and Waka. And they've done a little bit to help Alec Marsh at the major league level as well. That's fantastic. Those are all great things I want to keep seeing.
Not a little bit.
They've done a lot to help. But we haven't seen them yet develop a pitcher from our system to become a starter at the major league level. So can they consistently do that? I think that is the hugest thing of keeping success, like you just mentioned, for the long term when the Waka and Lugo and probably Singer are up. You know, when they're done, we're going to have to turn it over to some guys we developed. So I think that'll be big to see. If he can do that, great job. And the other thing that we're still kind of waiting on is the signing and developing of international talent. That was one of the big things that had kind of slipped out of Dayton Moore's hands. They hadn't really done much of that with success anyway since Yordano Ventura. And so, you know, when you have this just complete lack of international talent in your minor league system, there's something wrong there, because you're a minor league team. You got to win in international signing and developing. And so, you're a small market team. You got to win in those things. So I'm waiting to see how those guys do. It's still too early to tell on any of those.
Yeah. Those are all very important things. I'm talking about something that Pecola has actually done that have been not his greatest moves. And that's acquiring some hitters, right? He's had some trouble with the hitters that he's acquired. The biggest and most obvious one is Hunter Renfro. That signing, in my mind, we were critical of it at the time. It didn't seem necessary. It seemed like Renfro was a great candidate to be on a downslide. And he has really proven that he was not worth the money that they spent on him. And now they're kind of stuck with that contract. Nobody's going to take it. Nobody's going to take Hunter Renfro. And so I don't know. Like, that was a pretty poor move from Quatrero. And then alongside Garrett Hampson, who did I say?
Quatrero.
I said Quatrero. That was a pretty poor move from Pecola. It's also poor when you see it in light with like the Garrett Hampson move. You can argue the Adam Frazier move. I'm more dubious on the Adam Frazier move. I'm more like 50-50 on the Adam Frazier move, because I'm like, it's so little money and he is providing a little bit of value here and there. But the Hampson move and the Frazier move even combined didn't cost as much as Hunter Renfro did. And so that move really sticks out as like, ew, that was not a great, those three players who were all like hitters he acquired this offseason aren't doing much to tip the scales towards the Royals right now. And the same could be said of Nelson Velasquez, but at the very least, he put up a huge year last year in the 130-some plate appearances he had with the Royals, and looks like he has a greater upside as a player than any of those
guys.
And
still young, yeah.
Still young, still plenty young for him. And so, but acquiring hitters, at least at the major league level, looks like a little bit of a deficiency in his game so far, at least in the track record that he's had. Moving on to some of the other two guys we wanted to talk about, Mike, what do you think Matt Quatrero has brought to this team in his time as manager?
He brought something we actually haven't seen in our managers in a long time. And I don't want to call it, this isn't to knock Ned Yost or anything, but he's a thinker. He's a real thinker, like an analytical thinker, a guy who's, who's going to, he sees, I think Matt Quatero sees every single game as somewhat of an equation, like a, hey, what can we do to maximize our ability to win this game? And you have to be able to think of that during the game too. Today, Vinny Pasquantino hitting, pinch hitting to get hitting that triple, bases clearing, great example. But the everyday stuff is his use of John Schreiber, I think, is probably the most like I can kind of point to and say, doesn't it feel like he puts in Schreiber or even brings in MacArthur early exactly when he needs to? That's because he's done this math in his head. He's looked and seen, okay, this is going to be the time we want to bring in a John Schreiber. This is going to be a day we want to hit Freddie Fermin and play Sal at first. This is going to be a day we want to do these things. We want Blanco to play so he can provide some value in this aspect of the game or whatever. Or this is when we want to bring Blanco in the eighth to steal a base and get a run or whatever. It's just the real thinker in him, I think, is being appreciated more this year. Last year, people were pissed because, oh, you're not getting fired up enough. You're not yelling at the umpires enough, whatever, whatever. Give me a guy who thinks through the game and every day is maximizing our chances to win, and I'll take that all day. One thing I want to add with that is I think there's an aspect to that, to Quatrero doing those types of things, that also comes from Sweeney. It also comes from Zumwalt. It's a whole thing. But I think he's put in an approach for everyone that is, hey, find me the marginal value in a game. It's not going to win every day, but find me that one edge thing that I can get. And it's, oh, and here's the other thing I think he's doing. Or I can't say this for sure, but I think they're having an approach of, we're going to scratch runs in the first four or five innings. Anything we can do to get a run, steal a base, sack fly, bunt, like they did. Blanco put down a bunt today. I don't know if it was in the top five innings, but, and then after that, we'll try and put it on them. But we're taking any runs we can get in those first four or five innings.
And what's interesting is I think that approach might be the result of like knowing that, hey, as a team, if we score more than three, we have a really good chance to win.
Yeah. Right?
So scratch them wherever you want, get to three or get to four, and we have a really good chance to win. Right. Like, and so, yeah, I think you're right. I think what he is so great at and what he's brought to this team in the Matheny era, it felt like you were leaking value all the time in the decisions that he was making, right? Like leaking value because he played guys too many days in a row or let them languish in the lineup while they were in huge slumps or something like that. Like for him, for Quatrero, it feels like he's finding excess value everywhere. And that includes places like high rotation in the lineup. MJ Melendez not playing very much right now because he's struggling. Nelson Velasquez not playing very much right now because he's struggling. He doesn't just let guys languish and say, well, maybe this game isn't that important. Maybe we really need to win this game. He's like, no, we're trying to win this game, so you're not going to play because you can't hit right now. Like, and so I think that's incredible. And I think what you're seeing in Quatrero is a manager who makes a team better than the sum of its parts. And so if you just looked at this team as like a bullpen, a pitch, a rotation, and a lineup, would you think that they were a 95 to 96 win team, Mike?
Not even close.
And absolutely not.
And that's
right? Even if you're like, even if you're looking at like how they've played so far, you'd be like, no, right? Yeah. Because they have Nick Anderson as their fourth guy out of the bullpen. Like, you know, Chris Stratton, he's got, you know, you would look at this and say, there's no way this team is on that kind of pace, but they are. Why? Because Quatrero does enough to eke out wins in places that he really shouldn't.
Yeah. And look at the best example is the lineup. Outside of the two guys in Bobby Witt Jr. and Salvador Perez, none of the numbers look all that good for anybody. I mean, you can even – Mikel Garcia has been streaky. Yeah, he's looked good here, not so good there. No, not very good, any of them, outside of those two. And so you'd say, well, if you just looked at the lineup and their numbers, you'd go, that team isn't 500, but they're 10 games over. So,
and part of that is Matt Quatrero doing a great job. Mike, well, let's get to the guy who's probably the most important. He's lowest down on the totem pole, but he might be the most important of these three. Tell me what you think about what Brian Sweeney has done over the course of his tenure with the Royals.
Yeah, and that's why the first note that I have here in the outline is most stark change. And that's not necessarily all Brian Sweeney. Some of that is from the previous pitching coach, whose name we don't say anymore, but yeah.
If the bar is rolling around on the ground, it's pretty high. It's pretty significant when you make it to 5 feet. You
yeah,
know?
Exactly. Like, it's not and Sweeney has done just a marvelous job, like we mentioned earlier, developing guys at the major league level. I mean, they brought in Cole Reagans as a major leaguer and said, hey, by the way, you're going to throw a slider more. You're going to shelve the cutter a little bit. You're going to throw the cutter less. You're going to throw a slider more. Oh, by the way, now you're a top 10 starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. And they took a guy in Alec Marsh who could not be consistent, who gave up too many home runs and walked too many guys. And they made him into maybe the best fifth starter in the league so far this year. And so that's unbelievable. He's done such a great job at the major league level to improve guys. And I think we saw it at the beginning of the year last year with Lefty.
Chris Bubich.
Thank you. Chris Bubich doing the rehab start right now. And I think you would have seen great things from Bubich last year had he not gotten hurt. And so Brian Sweeney is the scary thing is Sweeney's so good. He may be maybe getting manager attention soon. That's how good I think Brian Sweeney is at what he does. And so, yeah, he's been fantastic. The ability to develop at major league level is so good. The plans that he has for pitchers, so good. Really happy they went out and got him.
Yeah, I hope that they are willing to pay him whatever he wants to keep him, because he will be getting attention from other teams to come in and be their pitching coaches or whatever kind of attention he wants, he'll be getting it. And the interesting thing about Sweeney is just that he creates so many possibilities, right? Which if you have a good pitching coach like Brian Sweeney, it opens up so many possibilities for you in terms of, yeah, you can develop a guy up from your system like Alec Marsh and sort of get him going and that sort of thing. Or you can bring in a guy in free agency who other teams have undervalued or who maybe is off the scrap heap or had a down year last year. Oh, and look, we've turned him into something good. We can bring in prospects from other organizations that maybe had tanked out as prospects. Guess what? Now they look better under Brian Sweeney. Like, that's a thing when you have a pitching coach who knows how to look at an individual player and say, I can get the most out of him. I can do something different with this guy, and understands that pitcher as an individual. The sky is the limit. The sky is really the limit, because usually the distinction between I am capable of pitching in Major League Baseball or I am not capable of pitching in Major League Baseball for a lot of guys is not like arm talent. It's did somebody see the right version of me in me and help me get to that version, right? Like, so Cole Reagans had the exact same arm talent when he was with the Rangers. He had the exact same arm talent. It took Sweeney, but also his coaches at Tread, right, to see this is the pitcher he should be and could be. We're going to help him get there. They saw the version of him that would become an ace in Major League Baseball, and that's what they turned him into. Hugely valuable that the Royals have a Brian Sweeney.
And what you just described about Brian Sweeney is what I've heard about every great NFL coach I've ever learned about, right? When you talk about an Andy Reid or a Bill Belichick, they talk about finding a guy that nobody else wanted or that people didn't think was as valuable and going, wait a second, you can do this thing. That'll help us. We can add this thing to you, but that'll work for you. And then you can help us. Okay. And that is exactly how you get value in places that other people don't see value. And man, if you keep doing that, the sky's the limit.
Royals Weekly is brought to you by All In Physical Therapy. You already know that All In Physical Therapy helped turn our mother into prime Andre the Giant. But what you don't know is that mom loved her experience there because of the personal attention she got from Tommy and the staff at All In. They guarantee a personalized one-on-one experience to suit the needs of patients recovering from total joint surgeries, sports injuries, or any kind of injury or pain.
You don't know pain until you've spent 8 hours on the floor of an airplane bathroom.
Mike knows what he's talking about here, folks. All In Physical Therapy is owned and operated by Tommy Frevert with locations in Blue Springs and Lee Summit. But most importantly, they're in-network for nearly all insurance providers.
In-network feels like wrapping yourself in a big blankie just out of the dryer.
I love that feeling. If you're a high school athlete recovering from injury or someone bouncing back with a brand new hip or knee, check out the best physical therapy in the KC Metro at allin-pt.com. That's allin-pt.com. Or give them a call at 816-427-5300. That's 816-427-5300.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
When you find a deal on your favorite thing in the McDonald's app and order it, does that technically count as online shopping? Save money with the app. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's, prices may vary.
The Royals wrap up their homestand with a three-game series against the Detroit Tigers to start this week before a day off and a trip to Tampa Bay for a three-gamer against the Rays. Who doesn't want to go to Tampa Bay these days? Mike, tell us about the division rival Tigers. We've played them already once. What are they up to these days?
Well, they're still hanging in there with a little bit better season than I think a lot of people thought they would have. They are 23-22, which is good enough for fourth in the AL Central, which is a lot better than a lot of people thought they were the division was going to be this year. In that first game, we'll have Michael Walker versus Reese Olson, a 24-year-old righty out of North Hall High School in Gainesville, Georgia. He's got a 2.09 ERA and a 0.99 whip. He's been fantastic this year. His four-seam fastball goes in the mid-90s. He's got a slider, a changeup, a sinker, and a curveball. Last time we faced him on April 26th, he went seven innings pitched with just one earned run. And so we're hoping to do a little better this time. Second time seeing the guy usually does a little better. The second day is going to be an interesting one. We'll see Alec Marsh versus Casey Mize, the first overall pick in the draft out of Auburn a few years ago. He's 27 years old now. He's got a 3.5 ERA and a 1.19 whip. Pretty solid year he's putting together so far. Another mid-90s fastball with a slider, splitter, and knuckle curve. He's got a Brady Singer-level ground ball rate almost at 51.4% ground ball rate, which is good enough for the 84th percentile. Last time we saw him, he went five innings of two-run ball. That was back on April 27th. The last game is a marquee matchup, ladies and gentlemen. It'll be Cole Reagans versus Tarik Skubal, two power lefties in the American League Central, 27-year-old out of Seattle University. He's got a 1.8 ERA and just a 0.78 whip. He's fighting for that Cy Young Award this year, ladies and gentlemen. Fastball in the mid to upper 90s, 96, 97. Changeup, sinker, slider, knuckle curve. He doesn't throw any of those pitches more than 30% of the time. He has one of the most effective fastballs in Major League Baseball with a 99th percentile in run value for Tarik Skubal. So that one looks to be a slobber knocker and two gigantic starting pitchers in that game. So I'm excited. I'm actually excited for all those pitching matchups. I think they're all going to be very fun and very exciting.
Yeah, they are going to be. That Reagans Skubal, it's wild to me when I was putting this together how similar they are in terms of pitchers. Both fastball changeup guys, like they're both very, very good. Both lefties, both throw in the mid to upper 90s. It's going to be a wild, wild game. After that they'll take off for Tampa and go play the Tampa Bay Rays, who are 25-23, which is good for third in the AL East. Offensively, they're slightly above average with a 1.02 weighted runs created plus as a team. They're getting good seasons from Isak Paredes, Richie Palacios, and Josh Lowe, though Josh Lowe only has about 42 plate appearances. He just came off the IL a few weeks ago. And then they're getting a pretty good season from a guy named, I'm going to mispronounce this last name so hard. His name is Ben Rorvit. Does Rorvit seem right?
I was going to go with Rorvit, yeah.
Okay, Rorvit. Ben Rorvit. He's doing pretty good offensively. I think he's their catcher, so he's having a solid year too. What you wouldn't expect from the Rays, though, is for them to have a real weak pitching staff, and their pitching staff's been pretty weak so far this year. They have a 4.29 ERA, which puts them 20th in Major League Baseball. They're usually known for their pitching, but they're struggling with it this year. I think they have a lot of injuries on that pitching staff as well. They're getting a pretty good year from Zach Littell. who has posted a 3.44 ERA. Zach Eflin has been about league average as well. Everyone else in their starting rotation has an ERA over five. Their relief, they do have a rookie named, he's not really a rookie. He's like a, he pitched like 60 some innings last year for him, but he's made like a couple starts this year, few starts, named Kevin Kelly. He's done pretty well out of their rotation too. It's a mixed bag from their bullpen. A couple guys doing really, really well. A couple guys not doing well at all. So we'll see. The Rays always know, always play pretty solid, tight baseball, good defense, usually decent pitching. We'll see what they give the Royals when they go to Tampa.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
When you find a deal on your favorite thing in the McDonald's app and order it, does that technically count as online shopping? Save money with the app. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's, prices may vary.
We'll end this week's episode like we end every episode with our Just a Bit Outside segment, where we talk about something that's interesting to us outside the world of baseball. Mike, I've been insane busy this week. What have you been up to?
I'm trying to survive the last weeks of a middle school. So yeah, I've been wounded a couple times this week. that's basically what I've been doing. Spending a lot of time outside because the weather's been nice with my son. We went out and played at the park today and he was able to kick a soccer ball continuously. He was able to dribble a soccer ball. I will send you the video. It is fantastic.
Lionel Messi.
Yeah. He's Lionel Messi. It basically is. But the other thing that I've noticed since in the last couple of weeks is garage sales are starting up. So a couple of huge neighborhoods by my work had garage sales. One somewhat close to where I live had garage sales. And I absolutely love garage sales, people. I love going to them. We've been going to garage sales since we were little kids with our mom. But the reason that I like them is that, especially where I live out in the burbs, you can go to these neighborhoods and find fantastic value in things. And so like for me, you know, we have a 2-year-old. That's how we buy a lot of his clothes because, you know, you get to a point where it's like, why am I spending a crap load of money on new clothes when I can go buy somebody else's clothes? And, you know, they grow so fast. So it's like, okay, just get them. So at the end of my school year, this next week, I will get a list from my wife that says what sizes and what kind of clothes we need. And then it's just my job to buy them over the summer at these different garage sales. But like the dishes that I have, I bought at a garage sale. I buy all, like a lot of my son's toys at garage sales. I'm looking for some patio furniture because the patio furniture that we have now at a garage sale is now getting old and I want to get rid of that, get some new patio furniture at a garage sale if I can. So I love those things. Get out there, find the things you need or want for, you know, a eighth of the price. All right. And that's go garage sale.
Mike is the JJ Piccolo of stuff.
Of
suburban goods. You know, like he's out there just looking for value.
That's
just
right.
All day.
And I'm in there haggling. Just, hey, I'm not paying this. No, I'm kidding. I'm not that guy.
Why would you be that guy?
I'm not that guy. I just pay whatever they ask. Yeah, it's already cheap. Here, take that.
Yes, excellent. Garage sales. I saw a bunch of signs for him. I went for a walk this morning with Riggs, and we just saw tons of signs for garage sales all over the place. No, my thing is a little more cerebral, as is typically the case. But it actually draws together. Yeah, that is always a dig on Mike. It actually draws together two things that I saw from this week. One of them is, have you ever seen that clip from The Town where Ben Affleck like walks in and he asks Jeremy Renner's character, he's like, I need your help. We got to hurt some people and you can't ask any questions. And he's like, let's go. Right? Like, have you ever seen that clip? You remember that scene?
I have. Oh, I have. Yeah.
Okay. for some, I keep seeing this clip on Instagram and stuff, and people are talking about it as like, find yourself a friend this loyal. Like, you want a friend that this type of loyalty is good. Talking about Jeremy Renner's character. First off, that's a massive misreading of that scene. You should not read it that way, but I'll get back to that in a second. The second thing I saw was a ProPublica story about this woman who ran for school board down in Texas. Because she was convinced that the school curriculum was like indoctrinating students to like a liberal agenda and all this stuff. And she was all like, outraged and stuff like that. And she gets in to the school board. She starts like learning about the curriculum after she gets elected and all this sort of stuff, and actually discovers that it's not doing any of that sort of stuff. You know, it wasn't indoctrinating children in any way, and goes back to the people who sort of supported her candidacy and was shocked to see that they weren't interested, that the school curriculum actually wasn't doing any of that. She was like relieved that it wasn't. They were like, we don't really care. We're going to keep telling the story like it is. Right. Like, and so she like ultimately gets marginalized by that group of people who at one time supported her. Right. Like, but the whole idea of these two things coming together was, I want to talk about the notion that loyalty is overrated, right? Like, I personally think that loyalty is overrated. I think that people talk about it like it's a great thing, but the way they talk about it makes it sound like a real bad thing. And it actually is a bad thing, right? Like, take that clip from The Town, for example. Ben Affleck comes to Jeremy Renner's character and asks him to do all this horrible stuff. And everybody says, that's loyalty and that's good. You should have that in friendship. I'm telling you, if somebody asks you to like go against your own sense of morality, that's not a good thing. That's a bad thing. You should say no. Like, don't be loyal against your own sense of being and self and ethics. Don't do that. That's bad. Like, that, if that's what loyalty is, it's a bad thing. Okay? If loyalty is something else, fine. Maybe it's okay. But if loyalty is sticking with somebody despite the fact that they are doing something that is wrong, it's not, that's not worth it. That is actually a bad thing, right? Like, and so maybe we need to redefine what loyalty actually is and actually looks like, because we're talking about loyalty a lot like it's, I'll stick with this person even if they ask me to do something that I think is wrong, which is not good, right? Like, don't do that, right? And so if you get a chance, go read that ProPublica story. Look at this clip from The Town and you'll see what I'm talking about. By the way, this clip from The Town, total misreading of that clip. That is not loyalty. The whole idea is Ben Affleck is asking a dude to commit violence who readily and always wants to commit violence. He's not asking him to break any sort of moral code of his. If he said, hey, Jeremy Renner's character, I want us to go do a book drive, then he might say no, right? Like, but like, he's not going to say no to going to commit violence. That's the dude. So that's not loyalty. It takes no loyalty to get him to do that. Like, anyway, that's, I digress on that. But just think about what loyalty actually means, because honestly, the way people are using it, it's really bad and probably a bad thing.
I actually read that story from a different publication also. A couple different ones actually put out stories about that, and I read it as well. The crazy things to me were, one, she was a former teacher like years ago, and then she was a radio personality before she ran for the school board. I think she might still be a radio personality down there. But and yeah, that's kind of the lead up to that. But I give some credit to her for saying, this isn't what I thought it was. I'm accepting this new information and changing it, because I've seen this literal thing happen. Now it doesn't happen in the examples I've seen aren't, hey, they go back to their supporters and say, hey, don't worry, nothing's wrong. The examples I've seen is they just stop doing the job. They're like, okay, I've noticed that what I thought was real isn't, so I'm no longer going to be on this school board. Being in education, I get to see a lot of access to those types of things. The other thing I will mention here as it relates to sports, often things will happen with loyalty to your team. Okay. For example, we'll take the Rashee Rice situation going on right now with the Kansas City Chiefs. We don't agree with him morally in the things that he has done and admitted to doing so far. But they aren't asking us to do those things too. You know, they aren't asking us to participate in those things morally. So we can sit back and go, yeah, no, I do not agree with what Rashee Rice or anybody else who's breaking the law that plays for one of our teams, or that's doing something morally reprehensible that plays for one of our teams. We don't have to do those things. We can disagree with that individual and still support a team that employs them, if you will.
Right. So yeah, do me a favor, read that ProPublica story, because you're right. Like, that person does deserve some credit for being willing to change her own point of view and her own opinion and that sort of thing. But, and I wish more people were like that, But I've seen that story play out in so many different ways across various things where like somebody bought all this bullshit notion of something. And then they find out, they get behind the curtain and they realize, oh, wait, everybody else knew that this wasn't real. And they were just like, I'm the only one who didn't know. Like, it's so wild to me when that happens.
Well, anyway, the craziest thing is when you find out the people who were telling you it knew.
They knew. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They knew, right? Like the people who were telling you, they knew. Anyway, it's funny. So yeah, think about those sorts of things. We will be back next week. We want to thanks for joining us here on Royals Weekly presented by Bet Online. We'll be back next week to talk about the Royals once again. Until then, be good to each other.
And go Royals.
When you find a deal on your favorite thing in the McDonald's app and order it, does that technically count as online shopping? Save money with the app. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's, prices may vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.